Welcome, friends. This is James Corbett of CorbettReport.com. It is the 12th of July, 2013 here in Japan, but it is still the 11th of July back in the United States, where today I'm joined on the line by Dr. Catherine Albrecht, who is a privacy expert that I'm sure will be familiar to many of my listeners already for her excellent work on the subject of RFIDs. She's a best-selling author of such works as Spy Chips, and she has a doctorate in consumer education and a master's in instructional technology from Harvard University. She is also, of course, the head of U.S. media relations for startpage.com, and it's in that capacity that she'll be talking to us today. She is available at CatherineAlbrecht.com, and we'll include that link in the show notes for today's interview. So, Dr. Catherine Albrecht, thank you so much for joining us today on the Corbett Report.
Hey, James. Thank you so much for inviting me on. It's one of my favorite things to talk about privacy.
Well, it's one of the most important things that we could be doing at this time, especially, of course, with all of the very interesting news and revelations, if they really are revelations, about NSA spying that's coming out at this time. Again, none of these revelations should be particularly surprising to my listeners, but it's always good to be reminded of the fact that we are now increasingly living in this panopticon surveillance society, and it's also extremely important to understand that there are some things that we can do about this and things that we can proactively implement in our own lives to hopefully evade some of this spying that's constantly going on. And on that note, I'd like to talk about a search engine that I am constantly talking about and promoting to my audience, which is startpage.com. It's my go-to search engine of choice because of its privacy-related settings. And I think that's extremely important for people to understand. But before we get into Startpage specifically, maybe we should just take a moment to make sure everybody's on the same page and just go over the reasons why it is important to seek alternatives to the main search engines, the Googles, the Bings, the Yahoos of this world.
Yeah, you know, people don't realize this, but for the last 10 years or so, these search engines have really kind of morphed a little bit. We're used to thinking of them almost as the librarian or kind of like your mom. You can go to them with any question you have and they'll just give you the answer. But the reality is that these companies are not your mom. They are really not in the business of providing you with free services just for the fun of it. What they're really doing is they're serving as market research portals to get more information about people who use them. And my undergraduate degree, actually back in the 1980s, was in marketing. And this was before the internet, and one of the things that my marketing instructors told me that would be one of the biggest challenges we would face as we went out into the world was doing market research, because people don't want to tell you intimate details about their lives. And, you know, this makes sense. If I were to call you up or one of your listeners and say, hey, I'm a market researcher and I'd like to ask a whole bunch of intimate and personal questions about your life, you would say, fly a kite. If you did give me the time of day and I started saying, can you tell me, you know, when was the last time you had a medical concern? What exactly was that? You know, have you ever looked up alcohol or drug counseling, ever faced bankruptcy or foreclosure on your home, ever fought with your spouse? You know, those sorts of things. People would say, go away. That's none of your business. But they hit on this really brilliant concept, which is if they can provide a portal in a window on your computer, then they can get you in the privacy, quote unquote, of your own home or your own office, your own bedroom or study. And as you sit down, you look around and you don't see anybody near you, and the door's shut and the shades are drawn, and that's when we type in these questions. So I'm a breast cancer survivor, and when I found a lump in my breast, there was some serious important stuff I needed to look up. And at that time, I was really glad that I had Startpage to go to instead of Google, because had I gone to Google or Bing, you know, I don't want to single Google out, or Yahoo or any of the major search engines, and typed in, you know, where can I find local mammogram services in my part, you know, in my city, then those companies, they would have given me the answer, but it would have come at a cost. And the cost would have been, they'd go, aha, well, we've got a live one. We know that Catherine Albrecht is, you know, concerned about breast cancer. And over the course of the next couple of days and weeks, I would start seeing ads for cancer treatment centers or mammogram services. And that's really why those search engines exist. They're like these empty, gaping windows where people go in 5, 10, 20 times a day and deposit their most intimate thoughts and secrets. And, you know, a lot of the stuff we search for is really not all that important. But when you think about how it all adds up, it is the case that these companies know more about us than just about anybody on planet Earth. They probably even know what many households in America had for dinner last night, because the people preparing those dinner probably said, you know, how do I cook asparagus? And they typed it right into their search engine. Or, you know, how do I get to the address of the appointment I'm going to? And they type that in. And then when you couple what goes into the search engine with all the other ways that they collect information about us, and, you know, if I'm speaking to Google, they've got the Google Street View. They've got a picture of the front of your house. They have Google Calendar, so they know the contents of many people's days. They've got Google Voice, so that they know who you're calling and at what time and how long those calls are. They've got, you know, this whole host of services, Google Maps, Google Satellite, that has a picture of your backyard and if you have a swimming pool or a deck, or, you know, if you're in a tiny little shack. All of this information being amassed into these enormous databases of information. And I think it's important for us to recognize that Google has accumulated the largest database of personal information on individuals ever collected in the history of humanity. And so it's not a surprise. Now, they're not doing this sneakily. It's not surreptitious. It's not illegal. And it's not hidden. If you look at the fine print, and in fact, you can even go on YouTube and you can see Google in videos explaining precisely how they do this. You know, they don't hide it. I think the real issue is that people assume that if it's not being hidden, if it's voluntary, you know, if nobody's forcing it on you, that somehow that makes it safe. And I think what Edward Snowden has revealed and what the whole PRISM program has revealed is that us allowing all of our personal information to go into these immense databases, however voluntarily and however much we may trust these big companies, is going to create and has created a very, very tempting target, almost like low-hanging fruit, that the government and other entities, hackers and marketers and all sorts of folks, just find absolutely irresistible. So the solution, we believe, is to recognize where your data is going and then make conscious decisions about how to prevent yourself from adding more breadcrumbs to that data trail.
Well, you make so many important points there, including, of course, the normalization of this process, by which it's just done openly now, and people just tend to trust it because, oh, they're doing it so openly. They're not hiding it. Therefore, it can't be a secretive thing that they want to hide from us. It must be good. And you also bring up the point that, of course, this is the type of information that a lot of government agencies would be looking for in their various investigations, whether legitimate or otherwise. And it's not something that we even have to speculate about. We do know, for example, that there is a Google-NSA relationship, although a federal judge has ruled that the American people do not deserve to know the details of that relationship, so that they cannot find any information about that, although I believe the EFF has launched their own court case to try to get more information about the details of that relationship. We also know from the source code of Windows back in 1999, it was discovered there was an NSA access backdoor built into the source code of Windows itself. So again, these types of relationships are not something to speculate about. We already know about them. And that has to raise extremely deep privacy concerns. Again, as you say, for people who would not give this information to people coming around to their door, knocking at their door and asking for it, but will gladly give it up to these search engines. Of course, this raises the question then of what makes StartPage different from these search engines. If we do live in this panopticon surveillance society, what would stop a government agency from requesting this data from StartPage?
Well, that's the good news. And, you know, normally, James, I'm a true blue American gal. I try to buy American whenever I can. But the good news about StartPage is StartPage is actually not based on U.S. soil, and it's not under U.S. jurisdiction. It's actually based in the Netherlands. And under European law and under Dutch law, there are very stringent privacy protections. Privacy is considered to be a human right in Europe, and we are one of the few countries on Earth that actually does not consider privacy to be a human right. We don't have a privacy commissioner in this country, whereas most other countries around the globe actually do. So privacy gets a lot more political attention in other countries and a lot more social attention, I think, in other countries than it does in the U.S. By not being based under U.S. jurisdiction, StartPage, which already has just a phenomenal privacy policy, we don't record people's IP addresses. We do not make a record of their searches. It's a pretty awesome product. But as far as the jurisdiction part goes, StarPage is not directly subject to any kind of U.S. jurisdiction. So a PRISM project or surveillance program or a Patriot Act request or an FBI data request, even a warrant or a subpoena from a U.S. court would not directly impact StartPage or our sister search engine, Ixquick. And so we have this additional buffer of protection that we're really one of the few privacy services that's just not based in the U.S., so we're not subject to all of that. I should point out that in the company's 14-year history since its founding in 1999, there have never been any government data requests made to our company. So we've never turned over any information to any government entity, and we've never been approached to participate. Now, part of that may be that we're just a drop in the bucket compared to the immensity of Google. We're serving just about 4.2 million searches a day, which, you know, sounds like a lot to us, and we're very pleased to see the immense growth. We've almost doubled since the NSA revelations. But, you know, compared to what Google's doing, that's a fraction of a percent of Google's search traffic. And so, really, there's also, I think, a power in being kind of a smaller company that we're really not attracting all that much attention. And even if we were, the way that we handle the data that we receive, I think, is important. And let me explain that. So first, let me tell you how I came to become involved with this company. I've been a privacy advocate since 1999, working on, in fact, I got my doctorate at Harvard working on the issue of supermarket frequent shopper carts that collect detailed records of people's purchases and keep those in giant databases. And in about 2008-2009, I became aware that Google was participating in something called the Google Flu Map. And I don't know if you remember this, James, but it was a kind of, to me, a very disturbing incident. This was back when people were very concerned about the SARS, you know, the flu, and there was talk about vaccination. And I know a lot of people were concerned that there might be forced vaccinations and they were requiring people to get vaccinated or lose their jobs. And so there's a lot of nervousness around that. And right about that time, Google made a bet with the Centers for Disease Control that they could predict a flu outbreak before the CDC. And what they did, and I thought this, you know, as a human sciences researcher myself, I had to go through all sorts of ethics things to even just ask surveys of the people I included in my research, and I was horrified at the lack of ethics from how I perceived it of what Google did to do this research. What they did was they boasted that they were able to detect a flu outbreak before the CDC because they knew more about Americans' health than the Centers for Disease Control. And what they did was they created a little algorithm that would look at all the search terms that people entered into Google, and if your search term indicated that you had the flu, maybe because you looked up chicken soup recipes or you looked up Robitussin or maybe your company's sick leave policy, they're pretty sophisticated, they said, we are able to tell if people have the flu when they're searching. And if we identify someone with the flu, we'll put a little red dot, we'll identify their location based on their IP address, and many people are also logged into Google services like Gmail, so they have your identity as well. And if they saw you had the flu, they would pinpoint your location with a red dot on a map, and sure enough, after a couple of days, they said to the CDC, look, here's where we think the flu outbreaks are going to be, and they were able to determine that several days before the Centers for Disease Control. So that was kind of my wake-up call. I had done all of my privacy research. I researched the best-selling book that I co-authored called Spy Chips, all about radio frequency ID microchips, which we call spy chips. All of that research had been done using the Google search engine. It was my homepage. I used it, you know, 10, 20, 40 times a day. I was a radio host at the time, and you know how that is. You're always looking stuff up. And when I came to this understanding, oh my goodness, it's not just me looking things up. They're looking back. They're looking right back at me. And I had kind of an epiphany of sorts, I guess, and I said, I can no longer contribute my personal information into this system. You know, here I am a privacy advocate. I've got to get out. And I didn't know at that time if I was just going to have to, you know, go off and live in the woods and get off the internet and never research anything again. So I combed the globe to find this tiny little company called Ixquick, I-X-Q-U-I-C-K or I-X-Quick over in the Netherlands. I invited their CEO, Robert Beans, to be a guest on my radio program at kmashow.com. I had him come on the show. I said, you know, you claim that you've got a private search engine. Tell me more. And so for an hour, he told me and my listeners all about the IxQuick search engine. And I was so intrigued and so delighted that there was an alternative to Google that wasn't Bing and wasn't Yahoo, which are just as bad, that I immediately switched over to using IxQuick. And within a year, we had launched the start page search engine. And let me explain the difference. So IxQuick, which has been around since 1999, is what's called a meta search engine. We take your search query. I now work for the company, by the way. I fell so much in love with them. I said, I've got to help you. So we take your search query, and we submit it to multiple search engines from our servers, so they never see you. We get the results, and then through a proprietary algorithm, we quickly, and you know, in a matter of milliseconds, pull out the best results and then serve them to you. With StartPage, what we discovered was that people really wanted the Google results, that they didn't want meta search results from other search engines. They really liked what Google was giving them. And, you know, that's no surprise. Google is the best search engine on planet Earth, bar none. I don't think anybody questions that. So what we did was we created the StartPage search engine, which is a private portal to access Google results. So when you go to StartPage, you'll see a little search box just like you would see it at Google or Bing. You type in your search term. We take your search term. We strip out anything that would identify you. We submit it ourselves from our servers to Google. We get the answers. We strip out any tracking cookies or other content that would come with it. We serve you the pure results, and then we delete all records of your visit. So we erase your IP address. We serve you the results through an SSL HTTPS encrypted link, so no one can eavesdrop on your search. And at the end of the day, we have no records on who's been on our website, what IP addresses have visited us, what search terms were searched for. It's all just wiped clean. It's a blank slate. And so even if, God forbid, we were to receive a subpoena that we had to respond to, or if we got hacked, it's never happened, but it happened at Google when the Chinese government hacked Google servers to get into dissidents' email over in China. So it's happened to others. It's never happened to us. But if it did, there would absolutely be nothing on our service to obtain. So there's multiple layers of protection. You get the protection of getting the results without the tracking cookies. Google never sees you. We make no record of who you are. You're encrypted, so even your ISP is unable to see. They can see that you've connected with us, but they can't see what you're submitting back and forth. And then we've got a really cool additional feature, which is not available really anywhere else on the Internet. And that is that when you perform a private search with either StartPage or IxQuick, at the bottom of the search, underneath the search term, is a link that says View by IxQuick Proxy. And what that means is, let's say that when I was looking up information about breast cancer, that one of the links was, for example, the National Institutes of Health. Well, if you go to the NIH website, there are, I think it's anywhere from like 6 to 10 different tracking cookies by third-party providers that are tacked on to some of these health websites. There was just a report out on that yesterday. So when you go there, there's all this garbage attached to it. And if I search for that on StartPage and I get a link to whatever health website and I click it, I leave the protection of StartPage and I'm just on the Wild West Internet landing on that page. But what we've done is we've built in a way for you to not only do your searches privately, but to actually view the content of the websites that you find privately through our proxy. So when you click View by IxQuick Proxy, we go out to the National Institutes of Health page that you want to see for you. We load all of their content onto our servers, and then we show it to you through our servers privately. So if there are any third-party tracking cookies, if there's any malware or spyware, if there's any, you know, really anything that would compromise your privacy, that gets stripped out as we serve you the private results. And then once again, we delete all records of who's seen what and what pages were served. So it's actually pretty cool, and it's a pretty thorough privacy protection. You could actually do almost all of your web surfing through it and never be seen by anybody.
It is pretty amazing, and the difference between that and the other search engines is just it's not even comparable. Just let's back up for a second. You mentioned that there's SSL encryption for these search terms. Tell people a little bit about what that is and why that's important.
Yeah, it is. When you go to a website, and you'll see this on secure websites, purchasing websites where you provide a credit card number, or banking websites where you're logging into sensitive account information, you may have noticed that in the URL up at the top, instead of http://www, you'll see HTTPS. And that little S after that means that it's using SSL encryption, or that it's a secure page. And what that means is that rather than feeding, let's say you're on, I don't know, CNN.com. Well, that's not an encrypted page. The contents of CNN has to flow through the pipeline of the internet into your computer. And then when you click buttons, your request flows through the pipeline of the internet back to CNN to deliver you that content. And I don't mean to pick on CNN. This is true for really any website that's not encrypted. That means that anyone along that pipeline can actually observe who you are. They can see your IP address as you submit the request, and they can see what exactly it is that you're viewing or what pages you're clicking up. And when I say anybody can see that, any eavesdropper who has the ability to tap into, say, a Wi-Fi connection would be able to see that content, or it could be your own ISP. You know, if you have Comcast or Verizon or AT&T, your ISP has the ability to view all of your internet traffic. And even if you trust them, you have to bear in mind that the NSA and government agencies have, you know, knowingly, this is something that has been admitted, that they have built back doors into a lot of those ISP systems. So even if you trust AT&T or Comrex or Verizon, you may not trust the people that they've given access to. When you add that little S on there, what it means now is that when you connect, for example, with StartPage or with Ixquick, both of our search engines, when you say, I want to look up, you know, mammogram services, the request that you make when you hit enter is encrypted. So it's scrambled up into gobbledygook that travels through the internet, and anyone who intercepts it can't tell what you looked for. They don't see the word breast cancer, they see gobbledygook. When it gets to our servers, we decrypt it using the SSL encryption key, and then we give you back the answer, you know, all the websites that have to do with mammogram services, and anybody who tries to intercept the stream of us coming back to you also sees the gobbledygook. So it's a protection against eavesdropping by authorized and unauthorized parties, and it means that only StartPage and Ixquick and you can actually see what's traveling back and forth. Now, where this is going to become even more important is that this fall we are launching our first paid product. StartPage and Ixquick, by the way, are both their free products paid for by advertising. So when you search for, you know, used cars, you'll get a couple of links at the top for cars, or if you look up jewelry, you'll get a couple of generic jewelry links. That's different, by the way, from what happens on the major search engines when you do a search. You might search for jewelry and find a link up there for fishing poles or mammogram services because 2 days ago you looked something like that up or landed on a website about that. So they're more tailored to who you are, whereas our ads are tailored only to what you searched for. So it's almost like a magazine. You know, you flip through Field and Stream, you're going to get ads for fishing poles and not much else. That's kind of how our searches are. But the paid service that we're launching this fall is called Start Mail. And this is the one I'm really excited about because people really understand the need for privacy within their email. So when you write an email to a friend from or to an account that is Yahoo, email, Gmail, Outlook, or Hotmail, If you actually look at the fine print of those accounts, they make it extremely clear that they read all of your emails. That's one of the terms of service, that they will read and extract the keywords from every email that you send and receive. So they're keeping a giant database, not only of all of your emails, but also of all of the interesting things that happen in your email. So if you mention, you know, mammogram, lump, or vacation, Cancun, or whatever it might be, they pull that out and they put it into your profile. And they add it into the other things that they know about you, your search terms, your search traffic, elements of their website you've landed on. And over time, they create this incredibly detailed picture of you, of all of your contacts. And this last month, Yahoo really horrified a lot of people because they switched over their terms of service for a new platform. And everybody with Yahoo Mail, some people who've had it for 15 years, had to make a transition to this new version of Yahoo. And one of the terms of service right on the top of the help page, they didn't even hide it, said, when you accept our new terms of service, you agree to allow us to perform content scanning and analysis on all of the emails that you send and receive. And we did a press release about this to let Yahoo users know that if they click accept and make the transition, which they've all had to do now, that their email is going to be openly read by Yahoo, not even in fine print on page 10, but right there at the top. And the fact that they've become so brazen about it, so blatant about it, and so open about it, I think is really an indication that, you know, it's getting worse, I guess is one way I would put it. And our service, StartMail, will be fully encrypted email. And what that means is that not only do we not make it our business model to read your email like those guys do, you know, why would they give you free email? Think about it for a minute. Why, you know, they're not your mom. Why would they give you a free service? Well, because they want to see what you say in it. It's all the better way to do market research about you to get onto the inside of your life and see what you're writing. So our model is completely different. We have a paid model where it will be between $5 to $7 a month for an account. We're taking a gamble that people will actually be willing to pay for their privacy. And those emails will be encrypted not only in transit, but they will actually be encrypted while they're stored on our server in what we're calling the user vault. So when you have a StartMail account, you set up the account with just a normal password to log in, but then you also have a PGP encryption password that only you know. And in fact, if you lose it, we can't give it back to you. That's going to be the one downside to this account. You know, if you lose your PGP password, that's it, because we don't have it and we don't want to have it. So if anybody comes to us and says, hey, we want to know, you know, tell us what James Corbett's, you know, account's all about, we'll say, you know, you'll have to talk to him. We can't give it to you. So not only do we not read your email through StartMail, but we can't. We've actually created the system in such a way that your email, all of the contents of your account reside on our server in an encrypted vault that no one can access but you. So when you first log on, you got to decrypt the whole thing, and it takes a little bit. You know, it takes a couple of seconds. It's not instant. And then when you log out again, it re-encrypts the whole thing and puts it back on our disk so that no one can see it, not even us. So we're pretty excited about it. Like I said, it's a big gamble. We've taken 2.5 years to develop this incredibly just amazing state-of-the-art product. And, you know, a lot of people keep telling me nobody's going to be willing to pay for that. And I keep saying, I think they will. I really do. And the best way to explain why they'll pay for it, James, is I got to tell you this story. So I'm at this Liberty Forum in New Hampshire a couple of months ago, and I was talking about StartMail, and I had somebody raise their hand and say, but, you know, wait a minute, why would we want to pay for this if we can get all these other email services for free? And I said, well, think about it for a minute. We're here in a hotel having this conference, and it was like a Sheraton. And I said, what, you know, not to pick on the Sheraton, but what if Google were here or Yahoo were here? And they said, hey, all you guys, you're paying $200 a night for a hotel room? Yeah, don't do that. Why don't you go across the street to our free hotel? And we've got all the rooms are free. Go ahead and check right on in. There's just one catch. We've bugged every room with cameras, and, you know, we've got cameras aimed at the bed and the shower. We've got listening devices embedded in the walls, and we bug the phones. And when you put it that way, I think people would say, ooh, you know what? I'll stick to my paid hotel room, thank you. So that's really the best way, I think, to understand these other email accounts, is that they really are giving you a free space so that they can observe what you do in that space, because that gives them access to a tremendous amount of information about you. And if you think about it, it really costs them about $5 a month to offer you that service. Would you, for the price of, you know, a cup of coffee at Starbucks, allow them to open all your postal mail or put a listening device in your living room? And I think most of us would say absolutely not. But, you know, we do it without thinking.
It's extremely exciting, and I think an idea that's long since overdue. So when did you say this is going to be launched?
It is coming out this fall. We are in internal beta right now. We have 45,000 people who have signed up as beta testers for StartMail. And the demand has been so overwhelming that we're closing the beta test list. And now we're making it available for people to have an opportunity to purchase an account. And I think we're even going to be restricting that. But it's coming out this fall. If people go to startmail.com, they can sign up right there and check the little box to be one of the first people to actually get an account when we launch it. And right now, I believe it is slated for sometime in September when those accounts will become available. I know that we're going to be rolling out the beta test accounts prior to that. So it'll definitely, everybody who wants an account, hopefully will be able to get one by the end of the year.
Excellent. Well, then finally, I am extremely happy to hear that you've never even received a request for data from any of these government agencies because you don't store it and because you're small enough, I think, to have gone under the radar. But one could easily imagine how all it would take is one highly publicized incident of some terror plot and the terrorists were using StartMail to correspond with each other. And this is why we can't allow this type of privacy. One could easily imagine that type of scenario playing out. Can you speak to that and the demonization of privacy that's become so prevalent in our society in this day?
Yeah, you know, thank you. I appreciate that. And I think a hotel is a good analogy to draw there, because if we get to the point where people say that you can't have privacy because you might do something wrong, we've got to be very, very careful about that. Because really, think about it, there's not really too many crimes you can commit in your email. I mean, you can't kill somebody through email. So email is really not, it's a communications medium. It's not a crime-committing medium per se. So if you're going to commit a crime, there are other elements to the crime than your email. You know, I suppose you could commit extortion, but then what you're really doing, even in that scenario, is you're committing a crime that has other pieces of evidence in it. So the concern that I have is if we demonize the daily communication that occurs between human beings, which is a natural thing that has been private since as long as there have been human beings, if we begin to say that all communications that occur between people must be monitored on the off chance that someone might say something bad to someone else, then we really go down a slippery slope of saying, okay, well, can we not make the same argument that what if a crime were committed at the Hilton or the Sheraton that they gave you a private hotel room and you can go in and just lock the door and there's no camera in there watching, you could do anything in there. And then once you say that, then you say, well, wait a minute, why would we let you go into your own home and shut the door? You could be committing any kind of a crime in there. And so I think that we have become so twisted and maneuvered and propagandized into believing that the mere act of wanting to be a human being left alone with a bit of privacy is somehow the retreat of a guilty party. And I don't buy it. You know, I remember when Eric Schmidt, the CEO of Google, really made a lot of people in the privacy community pretty upset a couple years back. He said, in response to the fact that Google makes a record of everything you search for, he said, well, you know, if there's things you're searching for that you don't want other people to know about, perhaps you shouldn't be searching for them. And there really was this implication that if you wanted privacy, you must be doing something bad. And I thought about all of the women who have suffered miscarriages. I thought about the lump I had found in my own breast. I thought about all of the personal and sensitive things that people search for and speak to one another about that they really do need privacy for. And it's not that they're trying to, you know, get away with something, quote, bad. It's that they just want to be left alone. And this is the thing. I wrote about this all the way back in 1999 in a philosophical piece that I wrote on my very first website at nocards.org. And it was, you know, what's wrong with the supermarket knowing everything you buy? What's wrong with people knowing every detail of your life? And as a developmental psychologist, I can say that we human beings are deeply social creatures, and we care immensely what other people think about us. Even if we like to think we're independent, we don't care, we do. You know, this is why people, when they're bullied, kids commit suicide. This is why I think even adults commit suicide. We are deeply social, and we do depend immensely on the approval of other people. And the need to have a break from that, the need to not feel the eyes of other people on us, judging us and observing us. You know, if you want to be in your home, and I think I wrote in this essay, you know, if you want to mop your kitchen floor wearing your Superman cape while singing at the top of your lungs, if you want to talk to your pet goldfish or, you know, paint mustaches on supermodels in your magazines, as long as you're not hurting anybody else, you should be able to do all of those things and more in the privacy of your own home without the fear that the NSA is watching you or that somebody's ridiculing you or your neighbor down the street is passing judgment. And so I think in that sense, we really, just to maintain our sanity in this modern world, we have to have a refuge, a place where we can let our hair down, where we can be with the people that we love and trust alone and know that nobody's watching or listening, where we can truly connect with other people on that deep level, and where we can just be alone and be ourselves. And if we take that away, you know, we know this even from watching prisoners, and there's been a lot of psychological studies. If you take people's ability to not be watched away from them, they actually start becoming mentally ill. They develop paranoias, they develop manias and obsessions, and all kinds of terrible problems happen to people if you never have that sense that, okay, phew, now I'm home, phew, I can, you know, let me put down the keys, take a deep breath, I'm out of the rat race. And, you know, that's why I think this is so important. So I think it goes beyond just quote-unquote privacy. I've always viewed privacy as a means to an end. And I think the end is sanity. It's deeper and better relationships. It's a freer, more independent society. There are so many things that if you take privacy away, you lose in society. And I think we need to hang on to those things if we want to hang on to our humanity.
Well, that is really well put, because at the end of the day, I think this really is a battle for humanity and for everything that human society has cherished in the past. And I always reflect on just how far we've come in the past few generations, and not necessarily in a good way in terms of eroding our sense of privacy and what should be kept private. And I think there is the sense that the tide may be turning once again towards, the pendulum may be swinging back towards the idea of privacy as something that we should be cherishing. And some of the latest polls to come out in the wake of this NSA spying revelation is that the majority of Americans now believe that the U.S. government is going too far in their pursuit of the war on terror. So perhaps we are seeing something of a return to sanity. And it's good to know that there are things like startpage.com and now StartMail that are coming along to help people to accomplish that, at least in some small way, to get around this spying grid system and to get off the Google, Bing, Yahoo, etc., mainstream spying grid. Dr. Catherine Albrecht, just a fascinating conversation. We could talk for hours more, I'm sure, not only about this, but about your excellent work on RFIDs and consumer cards and all of this really important infrastructure that's being set up right now. But I think we'll have to leave that for another day. But I will encourage people once again to visit your website, CatherineAlbrecht.com. And of course, to check out startpage.com, ixquick.com, and startmail.com. And again, all of those links will be in the show notes for this interview. So, Dr. Catherine Albrecht, thank you so much for your time today. I've really enjoyed it.
Well, thank you, James. And I'm going to give you one more website, which is kmashow.com, which is so much easier than trying to spell Catherine Albrecht. So kmashow.com. I do a daily show from 4 to 6 p.m. Eastern, Monday through Friday, so people can find me there. And thank you for all that you do to keep your listeners informed and to keep us all free. I really appreciate your work as well. And thanks for giving me a chance to talk about all this.
Excellent. Well, we'll have you back on in the future. Thank you again for your time.
All right. God bless.